My goodness, it's John St. Germain again, bringing you Crystal Silence League Radio Hour. It is September 22nd, 2015, and we're here in the fall. East Tennessee is gorgeous in the autumn. We're finally having the celebrated cool weather that they've been promising us forever. The humidity is down. The mold spores are up. Ragweed is spewing its gametes into the air. People going around sneezing, rubbing their eyes, going, "Oh my God, I'm glad it's fall. Achoo, achoo. Pumpkin spice everywhere. Achoo, achoo. Oh my God, give me some antihistamine. Achoo, achoo." Autumn in East Tennessee. It's a wonderful thing. Tonight, we're going to discuss happiness, strategies for happiness. We're going to identify unhappy mindsets, and we're going to determine how to get your happy face back on. So join us in just a few minutes. Grab your crystals and your crystal balls and your crystal light or whatever you like, and come right back. And we're back. We are back. It makes me happy to be here. I'm just happy to be here, and I'm happy that Blog Talk Radio appears to be working. All the buttons are working. All the audio is working. We've been having troubles with it in past weeks. And, man, I'm just happy as a clam. Are clams happy? We'll have to get one on the show and interview them to find out. Tonight we're discussing happiness. This is Happiness Part 2, and we're going to go into that. But first, let's do our crystal of the week. Our crystal of the week is celestine or celestite, depends on who you ask. And it's a very pretty stone. You can see a picture of it in our slideshow. It's kind of a pale blue, moony-looking stone. And it's called celestine because it's related to angelic work. And presumably those who communicate with the angels say it fosters communication with the angelic realm, and it undoubtedly is good for raising your consciousness into the higher realms. I know many people use it for meditation, and for raising their consciousness during meditation. It can help block out distractions during meditation. It does help you focus your concentration to a razor point. Many people use it for astral traveling and exploring other dimensional planes, if you're into that sort of thing. I have my hands full with this plane of existence. It's supposed to work to purify the aura, which we all know how painful a cluttered aura can be. And if you're around a lot of people, if you're in a work where you're around a lot of people, public service, where a lot of angry people, it's good to have celestine on you to help cleanse yourself of that energy. It can help you eliminate and reduce worry, fear, and anxiety, for instance. That's a very good thing to have. It's a wonderful stone. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's fragile. You've got to be careful with it. It will chip to pieces. Also, don't recharge them in sunlight. Sunlight will cause them to fade from their pale blue to white, and once that happens, they're not very effective. Now, a lot of people will tell you to wrap it in cloth, blue silk, to recharge it and put it in darkness, but I find that they're very happy in moonlight. They're very compatible with moonlight. Moonlight seems to help them quite a bit, and you can use the blue cloth thing. Don't clean them in running water. They seem to be a salt. I may be wrong about that, but they're like selenite. They seem to dissolve a little bit. They just don't take to water. And, again, keep them out of direct sunlight. It can help you with stress, anxiety, obsessive behaviors, as a whole list of stuff, certain phobias, and help increase your sense of peace of mind and harmony. So we do like celestine or celestite, and it's not a very expensive stone either. So we do enjoy that. So that is our crystal of the week. This is the Crystal Silence League Hour. I'm Reverend John St. Germain, the voice of the Crystal Silence League. I got it by default, I think. Nobody else wanted the job, so they gave it to me. The Crystal Silence League, as some of you may know, was founded in 1917 by Claude Alexander Conlon for the purpose of distributing and spreading and projecting prayer and positive affirmation for those who need it. And when Mr. Conlon passed into the silence in 1958, he took the Crystal Silence League with him until it was reborn by magical adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church in cyber form. And you can find us on www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where you can post prayers, and we get hundreds of prayers. I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of prayers a day sometimes. And definitely many hundreds per week. When you go there, people will pray for you. Many people will pray for you. And they'll click on your prayer, and you'll get an email that says you've been prayed for. Also, those of us who are pastors of the Crystal Silence League print your prayers out and put them on our altars daily. So it's my custom every show to print out many pages of these and to read them out loud. We don't identify anyone by name, just by prayer number. And I'd like to invite you to join me in praying for the following individuals. Prayer ID number 42305CM, who is praying for the removal of negative influences in his or her life. Apparently the negative influences are affecting this person and their family. May these negative influences please be removed from their lives. We have prayer ID number 42304AA, also negative influences. Wishes for Jay and this person, AA, to be uncrossed and forgiven and washed clean of negative energies, to be blessed and be together. And prayer ID number 42303HG, who prays for blessings because she says her man will get driving privileges and the use of a vehicle soon. If you're praying because your man is going to be behind the wheel of a car, let's all pray. And we have prayer ID number 42300CR, needs continued healing and blessing of her relationship with Mr. C, and wishes it to be bestowed with miraculous blessings and healings. Prayer ID number 42299JP looks for inspiration to find purpose in this world. May you find that inspiration, may you find that purpose, may you find that sense of direction, and may you pursue it diligently. Then we have prayer ID number 42298GT, needs to release negative energy and move forward from all the negative things in her life that apparently stem from work to home. And she's ready for the opportunity to move forward. And we have prayer ID number 42297NZ. This is a very sad situation, but seems to be doing better. It's prayers for a preterm baby. And so she says, please join us in praying for little E, who is born at 26 weeks. She's thriving but has some complications. And please pray that this child pulls through with no lasting disabilities. And, you know, let's all pray for the little 26-week preterm baby. Prayer ID number 42296. Prays for help with her financial spell work. May all financial spell work be successful. May we all be rich. Prayer ID number 42294PLS. Needs prayer for the removal of negative energies lifted from her husband. May that be true. There's a lot here. May apparently it looks like a hex maybe, and or a curse or a hex, and may this be lifted. May all the prayers be combined to lift this negative energy from their life. And we have prayer ID number 42290 SG. That a general prayer for all living animals, that animals not be fed uncooked rice and poisoned by humans because it causes death. I didn't know that. Prayer ID number 42289 PM. Please praise that the fiancé's parents stop mooching off them financially. Well, let's pray for all parents quit mooching off of us financially. Prayer ID number 42288. I feel your pain. KBH. Apparently there is a love triangle situation, and she prays for the pain of that to be released. Prayer ID number 42287 has money needs to the tune of about $8,000 apparently, and needs relief from that. And we have one more. Prayer ID number 42286 needs for the contractor to come and finish the work that he started. That's not a spiritual contractor, but a home contractor. So may all these prayers be considered by the spirits and by the higher powers. And let's have a moment of silence for all those in need of comforting and succor. Amen. Tonight we're discussing happiness, ways to achieve it and increase your peace of mind. My goodness, the pursuit of happiness, it's guaranteed us in the Declaration of Independence, isn't it? The pursuit of happiness, not happiness itself, just the pursuit of happiness. We're all free to pursue it. Doesn't say we can get it. Doesn't say we can have it. Now, it's that pursuit, I think, that is the problem. In pursuing happiness, it seems to run from us. And paradoxically, that's exactly how it works. The more you pursue happiness, the more it does seem to flee from us. And I'm going to tell you that I figured this out some time ago. The reason that is, happiness isn't a goal. Happiness is not a goal. And if you think of it as a goal, you'll never achieve it. It's always out there on the horizon somewhere. Happiness is a byproduct. It's an activity. And perhaps it's a byproduct of an activity, but it's a result of being engaged and connected and having a meaning in your activities. But we still pursue it as though it's some kind of goalpost out there floating around in the atmosphere. And I want to challenge some of the prevailing attitudes about happiness. Have you ever heard money can't buy happiness? Money can buy peace of mind, and that's the next best thing to happiness. If your mind is burdened, it's very difficult to be happy. Anxiety will make you miserable. So one of the secrets of happiness is live simply and don't run up debt. If you're running up debt, trying to pursue happiness, and man, I can look out of my window right now and see people with boats, and see people with cars that they can't afford. And I can tell you, living in the neighborhood that I live in, I know the financial range. These people can't afford that. They bought that crap on credit. And because they thought, a boat will make me happy. Oh, these fancy cars will make me happy. No, it won't. Those paying that thing off for the next 20 years is going to make you unhappy. So peace of mind comes, I think, from living simply and having, setting your lifestyle goals simple. Find happiness in simple things. Another thing I'm going to challenge is the model of happiness presented by motivational speakers and positive thinker advocates. Most, especially in this book called The Secret. Now, I dump on The Secret a lot, and justifiably so. That book is 110% crap. It might have a good idea in there, too, but as soon as there's a good idea, it's misinterpreted. This is because most of these concepts are not backed by the research or life experience. And I'm going to tell you one thing about it. Avoid the negative. It always says avoid the negative. Let's talk about avoiding negative people. If you practice this philosophy, and I've had people tell me this, clients and stuff, say, yeah, I've been doing this thing. I've been avoiding negative people. You're going to avoid everybody. Everybody has bad times. Everybody has blues. Everybody has negativity. You're going to avoid everybody. Soon you're going to find yourself alone, and there's nothing more negative than being alone and brooding. So then you have to avoid yourself. Rather than avoiding the negative, I'm going to flip that around. I want to say embrace the negative. Embrace the negative. And it's a very relaxed way of living. Look at the negative, and I'm not just talking about people. I'm talking about the negative things in your life. Don't, instead of this positive thinking stuff, which puts a lot of pressure on you, embrace it. Embrace the negative. Motivational speakers are always saying, think positively and banish the word impossible. And they said there's no room for negativity if you want to be happy. This is wrong. And it's also like saying, don't think of a pink zebra. Don't think of a pink zebra. Now, try not to think of a pink zebra. If you tell people not to think of a pink zebra, that's all they can think about. So if you tell someone to think only positive thoughts, all the brain is going to do is generate all the negative thoughts. So you say, think positive, think positive, think positive, and the brain is going to think negative thoughts. So you can't not think negative thoughts. What happens is putting all this effort into positive thinking just draws more attention. It puts a spotlight on the negative emotions that are just a natural byproduct of living. So you tend to be looking for it. In other words, you're looking positive, positive, positive. Oh, there's a negative thought, and then you kick yourself because, I'm thinking negatively. And then you start recognizing it in other people. You become hypersensitive to negative behavior. And what is negative behavior? You know, somebody says, I'm so mad today. Well, that's negative. That's negative. You can't handle anger. Oh, my goodness gracious, that fill-in-the-blank politician makes me so mad. Oh, well, I disagree with that. That's negative. Oh, my goodness, this guy said he's a chocolateholic. I don't understand. I just don't like chocolate. He doesn't like chocolate? Oh, my God, he's more evil than Hitler. He's off my list. So you become hypersensitive to negativity when you do this. So instead of banishing negative thoughts, which is impossible, bring awareness to them and examine them with just calm, just be indifferent to them, just examine negative thoughts. And you can't overcome them by denying them or repressing them. You acknowledge them, but you don't let them drive you. You don't let them control you. You do not let the negative thoughts own you. You own your thoughts. They don't own you. You recognize, you say, okay, there's a negative thought. You might think, oh, I'd like to kill that guy. You know, say you got a coworker that drives you crazy. You go, oh, man, I'd just like to strangle that guy. Acknowledge it. Acknowledge your desire to strangle him and then let it go. Let it go. Don't kick yourself and don't obsess about it. Now, another thing that a lot of the motivational guys like to say is set goals for success. Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. There was a famous Yale study, motivational. This is in The Secret, by the way. I've heard this. I used to sit in a lot of these motivational talks because I'd go to sales meetings. I was a member of marketing groups, and I'd go to sales meetings. They'd bring these guys in, and I must have heard this 20 times. Yale graduates, they asked graduating seniors because they had formulated life goals and then followed them up 2 decades later. Now, supposedly, the 3% of graduates who'd set goals out-earned the 97% who did not have goals. Now, that sounds great, right? It sounds amazing. The only problem is that never happened. That study never existed. That was made up. It's an urban legend. It's one of those things. It's an academic research urban legend. There's no evidence that that study ever took place. And this was pointed out to me by a friend of mine who researches such things. He said, you know, that Yale study. I said, yeah. It's really famous. He said, it never existed. And he said, there's no evidence that it ever existed. And he showed it to me in the urban legend book. Several studies have said that if you abandon goal setting, you tend to be happier. Now, this doesn't mean you drift aimlessly, but goals tend to limit you. If you set a goal, say you set a limit for a day, you say, I'm going to do this amount of work a day, and you reach that limit, you quit. And did you know taxi drivers in New York have a limit? They have a quota. And when they meet their quota, they go home. And this reporter discovered that on a rainy day, it's hard to get a cab in New York because on a rainy day, taxis meet their quota early in the day and they go home. There really are fewer cabs on the street in New York on a rainy day. This was thought to be an urban legend, but they looked into it and they said, yes, they meet their quota and they go home. So often goals can limit your pursuit of maximum success and maximum happiness. And limit you. Now, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to give up becoming anything ever. Although actually that kind of works for me. But if you focus on practice and not the end result, studies have shown that people perform better. If you just concentrate on the practice of whatever it is you're trying to do, you perform better. If you set a goal of perfectionism for something, you do not perform as better as if you just enjoy what you're doing, because you're not going to be disappointed in yourself when you don't reach your goal. Now, you're going to miss a lot of joy if you set goals for perfectionism. The happiest I've ever been, when I turned 50, I decided that I was going to do all the stuff I didn't get to do when I was a kid. And I said, I'm going to go back and rectify those mistakes. And one of the things I always wanted to do as a kid was study music. And my mom wouldn't let me do it in school because she thought that was a scam, another one of the scams the schools use to get your money. So I used to make musical instruments. I'd make them out of boxes and rubber bands and all kinds of stuff. And I picked up stuff on my own, but I said, I want to take music lessons. So I took piano lessons, and it was the happiest I ever was. And piano is hard. And one of the things I learned about playing the piano is you got to be okay with being wrong. You got to be okay with making mistakes. You're not going to play that stuff perfectly the first time. And, you know, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. Oh, hey, that note's right. It's wrong, it's wrong. Oh, that chord's right. It's wrong, it's wrong. Hey, I just played a tune. And, boy, that's a happy feeling when that comes together. But I didn't set any goals for myself with it. I didn't say, you know, I'm going to, in 1 week, I'm going to master the D minor scale and play blues. And, you know, in 2 weeks, I'm going to master the Prelude in G by Bach. That would be absurd. It would put too much pressure on me. There'd be no happiness there. Now, I did practically obsess. I mean, I practiced that piano 6 or 7 hours a day. But, boy, I loved every second of it. I set no goals. You perform better if you concentrate on the practice than if you concentrate on the goals. Many studies have shown this, apparently. We often say, you know, I'd like to have a stable life. I'd like predictability. I wish I had some, you know, if things weren't so unpredictable in my life, I might be happy. Well, maybe not. You know, people say they want permanence. None of this really exists. Stability and permanence and balance doesn't exist. Buddha shot that out of the water 3,000 years ago. Not only that, biology, science shows you that. The universe, there's a thing called entropy. law of thermodynamics, where everything moves from order to chaos. And so everything moves. Everything's impermanent, and everything we change. The cells in our body changes. Our thoughts change. We change. Everybody changes. There's no such thing as stability, permanence, security, balance. Don't confront that lack of stability. Don't try to hold on to something that's not permanent, but appreciate that if there is a stability in life, it's you. You know, that you are always going to be there, even as changeable as you are. There's still any kind of stability or any kind of focus or any kind of balance you're going to find in life. It's going to be pretty much what you bring in it. Now, the funny thing is, there have been books like the Seven Habits of Highly Successful People and the 10 Secrets of Highly Successful People. There was an interesting study in Australia that said unsuccessful people do exactly these same things. Unsuccessful people do these exact the same seven secrets, the same habits, with the seven habits of highly successful people, the 12 habits of multi-million. Unsuccessful people do exactly the same things. So, but you know, people that are selling you a book usually don't include unsuccess stories. Now, another of the many self-help secrets, they'll tell you to envision yourself in your ideal position, your ideal job. Envision yourself as a best-selling author. Envision yourself running the marathon. Now, visualization of your goals is a very important part of crystal ball practice. Now, this can have very positive psychological benefits. This can have very good magical benefits. This can have great benefits in terms of the four branches. But if you spend too much time doing it, it can reduce your motivation. You can live in that visualization, and it produces the same psychological benefits of actually achieving these things. So too much time and energy spent thinking about how great your life can be can actually reduce your motivation to achieve it. It convinces your brain. Your brain produces the same chemicals like you did it. So there's got to be balance, and I know this is going to sound funny, with worst-case scenario visualization as well. What this does, it reminds us that we can find a way to cope with the negative outcomes, and things very, very rarely go as wrong as we fear they will. What happens is when you visualize worst-case scenarios, you come up with ways to deal with it. You come up with strategies. And I was delighted to read this strategy a while back, because that's what I've always done. I obsess about all the possible worst-case scenarios and plan obsessively how to confront them, and they don't usually happen, but when they do, man, I'm right on it. Bam, people think, man, you're fast on your feet. No, it's because I've already obsessed about how to deal with it in any possible outcome. But, you see, I don't worry about it. I just plan for it. That's the thing. Worry and fretting isn't going to help you. But you look at it and say, okay, what's your plan? This is what I do with a lot of my clients, too. I'll talk to them and say, so what's your plan? What are you going to do if this doesn't work out for you? Well, I don't know. Well, we I don't know is not a plan. I tell you that I don't know is not a plan. You know, you got to have a plan. What's going to happen if this doesn't work out for you? I want to tell you that a lot of people wait for inspiration. They wait for things to feel right. Don't wait for that. Do it. And sometimes the best time to do something is when you don't feel like doing it. A lot of the a lot of these books I've read on self-help and stuff tell you are ways to pump yourself up, to get in the mood to getting things done. And the problem is it conditions you to think that you have to feel right, you have to feel like getting things done. And you take a if you wait for inspiration, you sort of take a lackadaisical attitude toward the idea of procrastination. And you can you can note if you go ahead and do these things, you develop a discipline to that. If you feel unmotivated, God forbid, you just go ahead and do it anyway. You note it. You say, okay, I don't really feel like doing this, but you get up and do it anyway. And once you do that, you feel really good. It goes boom. So this flies in the face of the myth of the writer's block. There's no such thing as a writer's block, according to a writer named Ann Patchett, who actually asserted that the writer's block doesn't exist. Writers, she said, writers named Ann don't get stuck, but a lot of the time we're not very motivated to act, even to do something we really want to do, like write the great American novel. But Miss Patchett counsels, the more we're willing to separate from distraction and step into the open arms of boredom, the more writing will get on the page. You just have to do it. So basically, when in utter disobedience of a lot of the positive thinking people, if you want to be happy, several studies that I've been looking at lately advise that we learn to enjoy uncertainty and insecurity, that we cultivate a calm indifference toward our negative experiences, that you become mindful, which means live in the moment, make friends with failure, drop any kind of obsession with goal setting, quit trying to think only of positive things. Don't be afraid to imagine worst-case scenarios. Take inspired action and be just filled with a sense of awe that you're alive and able to do these things. Just be incredibly filled with awe and remarkable wonderfulness at the very sense that you can do these things to begin with. These are just wonderful strategies. Now, I want to tell you some things. Hey, we have friends that have just shown in. I just looked into our studio audience, and we have lots of stuff in our chat room. Look at all the people. Wow, how nice this is. And we are at the halfway point, so we're going to take a break for station identification, and we'll be right back with more Secrets of Happiness.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays bring two wonderful shows to suit your taste. After the spiritual boost provided by the Reverend John St. Germain during the Crystal Silence League Hour, stay tuned for In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances, contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturdays, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from noon to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shape signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
I'm back, and I realized I didn't mute my mic, and I was sitting here playing my hands like this. That's me playing my hands. I have just noticed we have Industries Beverly Smith is moving from Wednesday to Saturday nights, a little change in our lineup. But Crystal Science League is staying on Tuesday nights. Same time, same place, same corner of the internet cosmos. So tune in and stay here. Our call-in number, by the way, is 657-383-0525. If you'd like to... Someone told me no. But our call-in number is 657-383-0525. That will be a number to call. Press 1, raise your hand, I'll get to you. If you have a secret of happiness, Liquid Libations is moving from Wednesday to Saturday. Correction, Liquid Libations is moving from Wednesday to Saturday. Very good. I guess In the Streets with Beverly Smith is still staying on Tuesday night following this show then. Very good. Very good. We've got a good lineup on Tuesday night to get you through the week. The guest call-in is 657-383-0525. If you have a secret you'd like to be sure to press 1, and I will get you on here. Hey, we have a caller, I think, here. I'm going to get... Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Caller, you're on the air. Yes, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, wow.
Did you want to be on the air?
I'm just calling in to listen to you, actually.
Oh, okay. A little sign came up that said you had pressed 1 to be on the air, but thanks for calling. Do you have any questions or anything?
I have so many questions, I'm not sure where to start.
Ah,
looking for guidance. Yeah.
How do you stay happy when you're down in the blues? What do you do to cheer yourself up?
I pray. I bathe a lot, or a lot of spiritual bathing, and
yes.
Yeah, and sun gazing. I've been doing sun gazing lately, which has helped my spirit quite a bit.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, you. Light therapy. You get that helps. A lot of times people will feel down because they're not getting enough sunlight. Do you ever use sun lamps?
Right.
Yeah, and spiritual bathing and prayer.
The sun comes up right in the east and in the front of my house, and so I'm able to go out early in the morning and watch the sunrise, and it helps my spirit tremendously.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, I won't keep you on the air because I know I just kind of assassinated you here, so I'll let you go. Thank you.
It's okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is what I think I'm going to do when people call in to listen to the radio. I'm just going to jackknife them. I'm going to say, hey, you're on the air. I wanted to talk to you about some enemies of happiness. I told you earlier not to avoid negative people, but I'm going to tell you now about some people you probably should avoid. These are people who really, now, you know, negative people are one thing, but these are some people you probably should avoid if you want to have your peace of mind intact. Injustice collectors. This is a term I picked up from a friend of mine who was talking at a party, and he said so-and-so was an injustice collector. These are people who don't remember anything good you've done for them, but they remember every little slight, real or imaginary, that ever occurred to them. And they build up a constant resentment. They go on simmering all the time with resentment about all the injustices that have been done to them. And I'm sure you know the type. You know, the government have done injustices. Other drivers have done injustices. You've done injustices to them. Everything is unjust. They have collected all the bad things that have ever happened to them. But if you do something good for them, that's just their right. You know, they accept it as their due, and they don't give you credit for that. But any little slight or perceived wrong, they store it. People who delight in unhappiness, kind of related to the injustice collector, but they just like to be unhappy. And, you know, they'll you know, you can't do anything about it. You know, everything is always the cloudy side of the street. They're related to people who are in a chronic state of existential angst. I can only give you a good example of that. A long time ago, back in the 80s, I had a friend, and my friend used to like to aim me at people. He would aim me at people to see how I would react to them. I was a little more volatile than I am now. So I said, I'd like you to meet some friends of mine. And this guy looked like Rasputin. I swear to God he did. He had this hair, nasty, greasy hair, and a nasty, greasy beard, and a nasty, greasy girlfriend. And we were drinking beer, and all he talked about was Reagan. Reagan was going to blow us up, and Reagan was going to push the button, and Reagan was going to push the button. And I said, man, do you even think this button exists? This button you're talking about? Oh, he goes, oh, it exists. And if you think it doesn't, I feel sorry for you. And I said, have you seen this button? Has anyone ever seen this button? Do you think Reagan can just reach across his desk and there's a red button? Yes, there's a red button. It's in a metal case, and he's got a key, and he opens this case, and I said, have you seen this? Have you seen any documentation of this? I mean, I'm on this guy, and his girlfriend is simmering at her eyes are just glaring at me, and you know, like I'm the most despicable thing since Joseph Stalin. And he goes, oh, it exists, and I feel sorry for the state of naive ignorance you live in, thinking it doesn't exist. So, you know, there you go, chronic state of existential angst. Several days later, I was sitting in a deli, and his rusty VW Beetle, of course, broke down, and he ran inside, slamming doors and stuff to use the payphone to call for help. So you see, constant state of existential angst. Drama addicts. These are people who stir stuff up, and then sit back and eat popcorn and watch it pull out. They'll create trouble at work. They'll create trouble within the family. Like you're in a relationship, and they'll invite you to a party, and they've invited your ex, you know, things like this, and then they just sit back and eat popcorn and watch it play out. So these are people you probably should avoid. Someone says, I've heard about that button since I was a little girl. Yeah, you just push a button, and the world blows up. There are some things that that you can do to be happy. Trust. Cultivate trust. Now, happiness, as I said earlier, is not a goal. It's an activity. It's a byproduct. And, you know, trust is the same thing. Trust is an activity. And, man, trust is a decision you make. And the more you make this decision, really the happier you're going to be. And I don't mean be gullible. You know, if you're walking down the street and a guy says, hey, I've got three cards here, and here's a little, all you got to do is find the queen. You know, you probably shouldn't trust that. But what I mean by that is, if you're in a relationship and you've had experiences that have caused you to doubt your judgment, let's say, and there's your significant other's cell phone, and you're tempted to check their messages, to hack their Facebook, to look at their texts and things. Here's where trust comes in. You're tempted, but you make the decision not to do it because you trust them. Now, the temptation to do it is not a violation of trust. The decision not to do it is trust. You see? You see? You're sitting there in your mind and you're thinking, okay, she said she went out with her friends, but what if she's out with her ex? I'm going to go check up on her. The thought is not a violation of trust. Trust is when you say, no, I'm not. I trust her. I'm going to sit home and watch cartoons. I'm going to read a book. No, I trust her. I'm not going to check up on her. You think it's going to ease your mind if you do. But I can tell you from a lot of experience and talking to a lot of people who've done this, that all it does is fuel the fire. You do it once, you're going to do it again. You're going to do it again. You're going to do it again. And it becomes a habit. You develop the habit of not trusting. Develop the habit to trust. Develop the habit to trust. Trust is a decision, not a quality. Another thing that will make you happy is sleep. Get enough sleep. Apparently, 80% of us don't get enough sleep. Not getting enough sleep will make you grouchy. It'll make you irritable. And it will make you exercise bad judgment. Get enough sleep. Another secret of happiness, find something you love and pursue it diligently. Stay busy. Stay busy. And if you stay busy with doing something that you love and you focus your attention on it, you're going to be happy. You can't help it. You'll lose yourself. You will enter a state of non-self. You won't be concentrating on negative stuff. The worst thing you can do is be bored and have nothing to do, and your mind will go down dark alleys. And by finding something you love, I don't mean do marathon watching of Game of Thrones or something. That's not productive. You know, do that now and again, but don't do it all the time. It's not productive. I think that diligent pursuit of something that makes you feel like you've done something, you've done something useful, you've bettered yourself, you're going to be happy you did. Exercise has been proven to increase all the chemicals that make you happier. Meditation has been proven through brain mapping to increase the part of the brain, the areas of the brain that generate happiness. Exercise and meditation are probably the two best things that you can do for yourself in terms of biochemistry to make yourself happy. Perfectionism is a surefire way to be unhappy. You set your goals too high. You're going to do it. We want this perfect job and a perfect life and a perfect relationship. Then a crack appears and we're gone. I say, well, that must not be it. Overthinking things, that's a good way to be unhappy. Trying to save people, that's a good way to be unhappy. You can help people, but don't try to save them. One man in history tried to save people, and look what happened to him. And he did rise from the dead, but he's Jesus. You're not, so don't do that. Sometimes we're paralyzed because we overthink things. There's two equally attractive options, and we're trying to make up our mind. On the other hand, we have this. On the other hand, we have that. So we're on the horns of a dilemma, and we can't figure out which way to go. Just pick something. Pick one. I always just say, just pick one. Pick one. Just pick one and stick with it. Once you make your decision, there we have. We have a hot discussion of trust in our chat room. If you're not in our chat room, if you're not taking advantage of our chat feature, you're really missing out. We have members in our chat who come in and philosophize from every aspect of life. And now we have a question: is avoiding doing things that make you unhappy a generally valuable happiness maker? Not necessarily, because you can't always avoid things that make you unhappy. But like we were discussing earlier, I don't know if you were in the chat, if you were in the room earlier, Siva, but we were talking about you can't avoid negativity. That's impossible. But you examine it non-critically, and if you're doing something that you don't enjoy, you just do it. And you do it, you don't procrastinate it, you just do it, and you do it with an attitude of mindfulness and indifference. You don't bring a bunch of baggage into it. Another question: are there specific things that make everyone happy? I can think of a few things. The song YMCA usually does it. I think that makes everyone happy. I think the song YMCA makes everybody happy. I think chewing gum makes most people happy. And I think that seeing young children succeed at something makes most people happy. But so I said puppy breath. there are mixed feelings about YMCA. But here's some secrets to making yourself feel better. In Buddhism, there's a tendency, there's a technique of replacing unwholesome behaviors and thoughts with wholesome behaviors and thoughts. So if something in your life is making you unhappy, you replace it with something that makes you happy. If you recognize thoughts in your mind that make you unhappy, you replace them with thoughts that make you happy. So just some general guidelines I've written down. Be generous. If you spend money and you give gifts on other people, if you buy stuff for yourself, it can make you happy too. But if you give money and gifts and time to other people, people's happiness increases. If people have studied this thing, your happiness increases. I found a Buddhist quote, in fact, from the Anguttara Nikaya. Buddha said, which are the three factors of the donor? There's the case where the donor, before giving, is glad. While giving, his mind is bright and clear. And after giving, he's gratified. So you get three types of happiness. You get the anticipation of giving. You have the joy in the moment of giving. And after giving, you have the gratification and the satisfaction of the joy that you produced by giving. So be grateful. I'll tell you, I give money to homeless people, to people on the streets, and a lot of people don't. They're always going to spend it on alcohol. And I'm going to tell you the funniest thing I ever saw, and it was in New Orleans. This woman gave a homeless guy some money, and this guy came by and he says, don't do that. He's only going to spend it on alcohol. And she turned and looked at him and said, what do you spend your money on, fat ass Twinkies? And that was really funny, I thought. And it's true. I mean, I've spent money on alcohol, too. And I've spent money on things that were probably worse for me than alcohol, you know, like Twinkies. So, you know, generosity doesn't have an agenda. You don't give somebody a gift and tell them what to do with it. So if you do give money to homeless people, you know, what are you going to do? Follow them and see where they spend it? You know, give someone a gift and let it go. Savor your time. Savor every day, every moment of your life. The older you get, time goes by faster because we're not paying attention. Savor everything, even the stuff that you think might be boring. Savor it, and don't dwell on the past. There's another nice little Buddhist quote. They sorrow not for what is past. They have no longing for the future. The present is sufficient for them. Hence it is they appear so radiant. Don't compare in the 12 steps. Compare and despair. There's always going to be people better than you at what you do and people who are not as good at what you do. Don't compare. And one of my watchwords is from the Dhammapada, as a rock remains unmoved by the sun and the wind, so the wise remain unmoved by praise or blame. Don't compare. Don't compare yourself to other people. Don't say, oh my gosh, you know, he or she is better looking, stronger, richer, better than me, that nicer car. Compare and despair. That is the thing is, I know in Buddhism what you go for is a kind of non-conscious state where you're unself-conscious. you relate to other people without saying us and them, you know, me and you. You don't compare. You know, you don't feel self-conscious. You don't feel like, oh my gosh, you know, he's a lot better looking than me. Don't put money high on your list as a measure of happiness or success, because once again, there'll be no end to that. Every time you need, is it Robertson's rule, Parkinson's law, needs expand to fill available money. And so if you are very careful with your spending, you won't run up a lot of debt. And if you don't run up a lot of debt, you're not going to need too much money. If you do set goals, make them meaningful. We talked earlier about how setting goals can be really frustrating and limit you, but if you do set goals, make them meaningful. A good goal is to increase your happiness. Today I'm going to do more happy things. Every year I make a resolution to spend more time with my harmonica, because I love playing my harmonica. Every year I say, I'm going to spend more time with my harmonica. I'm going to learn some of these really difficult licks and turnarounds and things. And every year I try to, and I never do. And this year I actually have managed to do that. I set time every day. And, you know, I have an organ, not a physical organ, but a musical instrument organ. And I've been having a really good time playing that thing. I'm not very good at it, though. My neighbor told me every time I play my organ, her cat eats her own kittens. But I'm getting better at it. Take initiative. If you have a job and you don't like it, take initiative. If you don't like your job, pretend you like it. Pretend it's the best thing in the world. This was something I advised a friend of mine to do. We had this crappy job. We had a crappy boss. I said, hey, why don't we act like we love this place? And that was back when I was an engineer. I said, why don't we act like this is the greatest thing in the world and we just love Jerry, who was our boss, and he was a dickhead. But we pretended that we were happy, and we were doing all kinds of stuff around the place, and it was a remarkable transformation. Everybody else got on board with it, and I was doing it to be a smartass, but then my mind changed, and over time I really enjoyed my job. Another way of being happy is don't be an angry loner. Pretend you like it. I love it. Yeah, yeah. Freud said if you wear a mask long enough, it'll stick. Pretend you like your work. I was in show business a long time. At one time, I did 150 shows a year, and there were times I was really I was just tired. I was like, oh man, I gotta do a show. And I had this trick I used to do. While I was traveling to a show, I was driving to a show, in my mind I pretended I was going to go make love and just have the hottest sex I'd ever have in my life with the most gorgeous woman in the world. So I tricked my mind that way. Look at possibilities. Keep possibilities open. Always in your mind see how things are better. There was a story Buddha said, even if bandits were to carve you up savagely, limb by limb, with a two-handed saw, he among you who lets his heart get angered even at that would not be doing my bidding. You should train yourself. Our minds will be unaffected. We will say no evil words. We'll remain sympathetic with a mind of goodwill and no inner hate. We'll keep pervading these people with an awareness imbued with goodwill, and beginning with them, we'll keep pervading the all-encompassing world with an awareness imbued with goodwill, abundant, expansive, immeasurable, free from hostility, free from ill will. That's how you should train yourself, says the Buddha. If somebody was sawing me up with a saw, though, I think I'd be calling them all kinds of sons of bitches, but that's just me. Another secret of ongoing happiness, listen to the LMC Radio Network to get your boost of spiritual and magical inspiration. I'm John St. Germain. I'll be back next week. Stay tuned, I believe, unless I'm about to be mistaken, for In the Street with Beverly Smith. And I think we're going to be fine with that. I think we're going to be next week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.